That's right, it's Friday, July 11th, 2008. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy one last time. We're streaming live at NovaMRadio.com, the Nova M Radio Network. The Sammy Cam in full effect at SamCedarShow.com, proving once again I spend my pre-show time prepping and not primping. In fact, Ian just asked me if I just woke up. More or less, folks, what can I tell you? My sleep schedule is dictated by my child. So I get it when I can. New York Times today, banking regulators seized IndyMac Bank Corp, one of the country's largest mortgage lenders, on Friday evening. The bank, a star in the subprime era, is the second largest ever to fail and the first major bank to shut its doors since the savings and loans crisis of the 1980s. The bank collapse came after a frenzied week as IndyMac executives tried and failed to bolster the bank's financial footing. The bank, based in Pasadena, California, said on Monday that it had stopped making new loans, announced layoffs of more than half of its 7,200 workers, but IndyMac's customers, afraid their savings might disappear, stampeded tellers demanding their money back.
We'd like to thank you, Harvard Hoopa.
That's right, folks. What's old is new again.
We'd like to thank you.
What a bunch of whiners.
They want my money back. I want my money back.
Come on. Suck it up. What about your money in that Swiss bank account? What about all that cash you have hidden in the Caribbean? You whiners!
I want my savings!
Everything's fine, folks. Don't panic. It's all in your mind. You're all imagining that IndyMac went under. You're all imagining. It's all just in your imagination. You have a mental recession. Your mental problems are also telling you that the United States of America is weighing the takeover of both Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, two of the biggest, not even two of the two biggest mortgage giants in the country. The New York Times, again, alarmed by the growing financial stress at the nation's two largest mortgage finance companies, senior Bush administration officials are considering a plan to have the government take over one or both of the companies and place them in a conservatorship. The companies Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Now, you understand that between Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, over half of the nation's mortgages are held by these two companies. They've been hit hard by the mortgage foreclosure crisis. Their shares are plummeting. Investors worry that companies will suffer losses far larger than the $11 billion they've already lost in recent months. Under a conservatorship, the shares of Fannie Mae and Freddie would be worth little or nothing, and losses on mortgage they own or guarantee, which could be staggering. We're talking trillions now, folks. Would be paid, of course, by you suckers, you taxpayers.
We'd like to thank you, Harvard Hoopa.
I don't want my tax dollars going to pay out fat cats. Moral hazard, who cares?
Why the whining, folks?
Just become a millionaire. Stop your whining.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. John McCain today supposedly, I don't know, he tried to distance himself from Graham again. We'll have more on this story, but apparently now Graham is, I don't know. He's either not his top economic advisor anymore. He's just the co-chair of his campaign. This is a guy who they're talking about to head to be the Treasury Secretary. A guy who's telling Americans, you're a bunch of whiners. It's all the media's fault. I mean, how dare the media write this story about regulators seizing IndyMac Bank Corp? And the media telling people that customers, whiny customers, stampeding tellers, demanding their money back. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac may need a bailout with your tax dollars. You see, folks, when there's an upside, they get it. When there's a downside, you get it. That's right, Lauren. You. Enjoy. You don't need roads. You don't need regulatory agencies. You don't need infrastructure. You don't need health care. You don't need Social Security. You don't need anything with your tax dollars. When you can spend it on saving fat cats' asses, as it were. Just unbelievable. And, of course, all of this brought to you by John McCain's top economic advisor, Phil Graham. Not to mention, he brought to you the energy crisis in California with his Enron shenanigans. But, you know, at the very least, you have to give him credit for watching out for his wife, who was a high executive at Enron at the time. So at the very least, his family values, not questionable. John McCain, huge story in the L.A. Times today. Apparently, even St. Ronald Reagan, who himself was, twice divorced? I don't remember. Maybe once, twice. I don't care about divorce. John McCain, I don't care that John McCain apparently has sort of, what's the word I can use? First he said that he started dating his current wife when he was separated from his prior wife, and then it turns out the stories don't exactly jive. It's not the only instance we have today of John McCain reversing himself on, you know, this is the Straight Talk Express, folks. When this guy talks, I got some straight talk for you, friends. My friends, I got some straight talk for you. That's right, the John McCain nose whistle. My friends, I have some straight talk for you. What a great story we have about John McCain. Talking about how he outwitted his captors when he was being tortured. We'll get to that later. When we come back, though, we're going to talk to Liz Rose. She's Deputy Director of Communications for the ACLU. We're going to hear about their lawsuits, plural, that they have filed in an effort to strike down the new FISA bill. We'll give you an update on that. We're going to be talking to Janine Garofalo tonight. We're going to be talking about the Garbage Warrior film. We're going to take a break. Sam Cedar and for Mike Malloy, 800-989-1480. Be right back. We are back. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. Numbers 800-989-1480 on the Nova M Radio Network. Sammy Cam is in effect at samcedarshow.com. If that site's getting slammed, go to samcedarshow.blogspot.com. On the phone, Liz Rose, Deputy Director of Communications for the ACLU, to talk about their filing of lawsuits to challenge the new FISA law. Liz, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
Now, Liz, my understanding is that you filed, or the ACLU has filed, two actions. One action with the actual FISA court, All proceedings regarding the constitutionality of the FISA law should be open to the public and transparent, and that the proceedings be adversarial, in other words, so that someone like the ACLU and not just the government would actually be there. And a second action filed in federal court in the Southern District of New York, alleging that the provisions which vest vast new warrantless eavesdropping powers in the president are for multiple reasons unconstitutional. Tell me first about the action that you filed with the FISA court.
Okay. Well, let me start, Sam, by saying I'm really from the Washington, D.C. legislative office. So, you know, you, it sounds like you already know more about the lawsuits than I do, but I'll try to talk you through it. Yes, everything that you've said is exactly right. You know, Congress made this huge error, and the only way to rectify a law once the president has signed it is to go to court. And that's exactly why the ACLU has several offices. We have a legislative office, and when we lose legislative battles, we go to the courts, and then when we lose court battles, we go to legislative battles. So it's one then the other. In our view, and I think that, you know, I'm sure a large section of your audience agrees with us, what Congress did with the FISA Amendments Act is unconstitutional. And, you know, it says clearly in the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution, there's a prohibition of general warrants and unreasonable searches. In the FISA law, there are several, basically, it's really a huge executive power grab for the executive branch, for the president. And most Americans, you will never know if you are being targeted, because the FISA law allows unidentified targets, huge dragnets of emails, phone calls, and information.
So it used to be that the government would go to this secret FISA court and say, okay, we have some targets. This is their names. This is why we are targeting them. This is our suspicions. We need a warrant. They could have actually started under the FISA law. They could have actually started surveillance of them and come back 3 or 4 days later.
Exactly.
To actually present this. And now my understanding is that all the Department of Justice has to do is go to the FISA court and say, we want to target some people. And the FISA court says, okay.
Right, exactly. So they can say, we want to target all calls, you know, anybody who's calling Afghanistan or anyone who's calling Iraq or anyone who's calling Italy. And
so theoretically, they could just go to the FISA court once and say, you know, we think really we need to tap all the calls that are going to any country that is in the Eastern Hemisphere.
Right. As a matter of fact, it's even crazier than that. The government can intercept U.S. communications without having to identify the facilities, the phone lines, email addresses, or the locations. So theoretically, the government could use the new law to collect phone calls between the U.S. and the U.K., you know, simply by saying to the court that it was targeting someone abroad. Now, one of the reasons why we think this is insane and not a good idea is because it's not even smart law enforcement. You know, it's collecting huge amounts of data. It's just not, it's then searching for a needle in a haystack. So, you know, not only is this unconstitutional and a huge invasion of privacy, but we also think it's just unintelligent. It, you know, it doesn't even make any sense.
Let me ask you this question. Now, we've heard a lot of talk that in justifying this vote, the Democratic presidential nominee has mentioned this, and others have mentioned that. Well, we can follow criminal prosecutions if there's a violation of this law, or if there has been. But in fact, it's almost impossible to prove that.
Right.
Because for them to have done something criminally wrong, the requirements are so general and so broad that it's virtually impossible for them to actually controvert this law, because they don't have to show anything in terms of reasonable cause.
Right. And I think the combination of government secrecy and, you know, of course the government is going to have a very good excuse to call something secret and classified if they're searching for terrorism. And so the Bush administration in particular has been great about cloaking everything in secrecy. They say everything is classified. And so you never know if it's because it's embarrassing or because it really has to do with government secrets that people should not be allowed to know. And I think one of the tricks of this kind of government secrecy is Americans will never know. Several of the plaintiffs who are suing along with the ACLU, we're representing them, are people who routinely have to call overseas. And that's one of the things they want to know, if they're being targeted.
And that's why you have so many. You have journalists on there. You have NGOs. You have human rights groups who have all joined in these lawsuits.
We do. And one of the things that Americans need to understand about this new FISA law is that, you know, the Congress has said and the president has said, oh, we need this to fight terrorists. But in fact, what the law is doing is it's sort of like those crazy watch lists. You know, when you go to the airport and people like
right.
Ted Kennedy can't get on the airplane, they are doing a dragnet and all of us are along in the dragnet. So they can look at your communications for no reason. They can look at my communications for no reason. Even if you have no overseas relatives and you have no overseas friends, so you're sitting there thinking, well, this isn't going to affect me. In fact, you don't realize when you call the computer help desk, your call mm-hmm. might be routed overseas. So you could have your phone calls and emails monitored by the government without a warrant, just because you called and, you know, ordered a bicycle part.
Now, let me ask you this. This is a question that really, and I don't know, maybe you don't know the exact parameters of this,
mm-hmm.
but how do you prove that you have standing? I mean, do you need standing as in a typical case that you prove that somehow you have been harmed by this for these suits to go forward?
I know that the standing issue is a challenge in cases like this. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but I know that standing is always an issue. And we think we have a strong case or we wouldn't have gone forward. But there are several, hurdles that the ACLU and the plaintiffs have to leap over. This law, though, was such a huge executive power grab and was written so broadly that I think we may, be able to pull it off.
All right. Well, I wish you the best of luck, and I appreciate your joining me, Liz Rose. Folks, head over to the ACLU.org, get more information, see how you can help fight this unconstitutional law. Liz, thanks for joining me. We got to take a break, folks. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy, number 800-989-1480. We'll be right back. Sammy Cam in effect at samcedarshow.com.
Time to call on the ACLU. Talking about the ACLU. They got everything you need to employ to beat up on the good old boys. Talking about the ACLU. My mama warned me. ACLU.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
There you go, folks. The dragnet now cast across the country. Our government spying on all of us. Your tax dollars at work when they're not bailing out fat cats from Wall Street. They're spying on you. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. Number is 800-989-1480. Sammy Cam is in effect at samcedarshow.com. Some of the benefits of the new FISA law, if you lose your keys, call the NSA. They'll tell you where they were. Did you forget that number for the plumber that you wanted to call? Call the NSA. They probably have it in their books. All of this, of course, coming from the great IMers on the Sammy Cam. It's Casual Friday, folks. That means I'm going to be very casual about keeping you on topic. But let's first go to Lance. He is a longtime SamCedarsShow.com blogger, and he's also heading up an organization called American Heroes Returns. Welcome to the program, Lance.
Hey, Sam, how you doing?
Hey, Lance, I'm doing well. Thanks for calling in, buddy.
First, I want to tell you, it was great to see that picture of your little one. She's beautiful.
Well, thank you. And I've seen the picture of your son. He's over in Iraq now, is that right?
He is. He's on the streets of Baghdad tonight.
Well, we all wish...
Doing whatever they're doing over there.
Right. Well, we all wish him a safe return. So, Lance, tell me about American Heroes Returns.
Well, in speaking with the folks, our not-for-profit's been around for a lot of years, and, of course, with my son being over there, it redirected my attention. And so we had gone to the base at Fort Bragg and to the VA medical hospitals and asked them, what can we do?
Mm-hmm.
And they made very clear that one of the big holes where they cannot provide services is they're doing a great job providing therapy for the post-traumatic stress disorder.
Right.
But the problem is that when those guys are, and gals, you know, it's men and women, who are getting treatment, they have to end up going back to their home. There's no temporary, therapeutically appropriate living arrangement for them. So they're living on the streets, they're living in homeless shelters, or they're going back with their families, and that can be a really bad situation.
Right. I would assume adjustment in those situations is near impossible.
Well, because, you know, wives, spouses, parents, kids aren't trained to assist them in the way they need to be assisted while they're in recovery. We can't expect them, you know, to be professionals and know how to counsel in the middle of a family conversation. And so what they say they need is a place for them to go that is supportive of the therapy they're getting. And so we came up with some solutions, and the Pentagon has responded well. I got a letter from Admiral Mullen.
Mm-hmm.
And also from Chairman Filner from California, who's the chairman of the Veterans Affairs Committee, has given a green light. Says, come on, let's do some good modeling. Let's show that it works, and then let's get back here and write some legislation. So everybody wants us to do something, and we're out there doing it. We're creating a farm program, and there'll be several different farm programs. One for the guys with PTSD, and then one for the women. They've got their own issues, which. You probably can't believe some of the stuff that goes on over there.
Yeah.
And so that's what we're doing. And if anyone wants to go to AmericanHeroesReturn.com or CampHero.us, they can learn a lot about what we're doing. We're also a member now of America Supports You, which is a group of about 350 organizations that the Pentagon has vetted and said, you know, these are groups that we think you should support. So we're out there just trying to provide solutions for those men and women who are giving everything for us, and it's a way for us to be here for them when they get back.
Lance, thank you so much for joining us. It's AmericanHeroReturns.com. I appreciate your calling in. Folks, head over there and help out in any way you can.
Thanks so much, Sam. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Lance. It's good to hear from you.
Thanks.
All right, folks, AmericanHeroesReturns.com. Very important to support these men and women. They're essentially, you know, they're doing what the job they signed up for. It is our responsibility to make sure that civilian leadership doesn't throw them into quagmires and doesn't waste, their service and take advantage of them because they're willing to do their duty. Let's go to, Mike, listening to Sirius Satellite Radio in Atlanta, Georgia. It's Casual Friday. Mike, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I wanted to disagree with your point of view on the whole FISA bill.
Okay.
For a couple reasons. Probably the most important is that program has been used to stop attacks on American soil already.
It has.
It has indeed.
And where are you getting this information from?
Well, it's not privileged information. It's in the public domain. If there was,
really? I have never seen. I mean, I've heard about. I heard for weeks the story of the guys in Florida who were entrapped by an FBI agent, and they needed boots and uniforms to overtake the country. I heard for weeks about Jose Padilla, who basically left a stove open to blow up a building. I have not heard of one reported case where this FISA bill has actually stopped the case. Stopped an attack.
Well, okay. I encourage you to look into it a little bit deeper because there are many attacks that have been stopped.
But you can't cite one.
Absolutely, I can. The plot on the Brooklyn Bridge.
The Brooklyn Bridge plot was a joke.
See,
and how do you know this was basic? But how do you know this was done by FISA?
You say it was a joke, but that's not.
They were going to take apart the Brooklyn Bridge with blowtorches?
And when the U.S. government funded a study to see how vulnerable it was. We found that it actually was very vulnerable, and we put people where exactly where they were planning on going.
Okay.
And then I encourage you to do a little bit more research and look into it, because it's...
I certainly will.
Thank you. But
now, so let me ask you this, Mike. If Pfizer worked, Mike, let me ask you this. If Pfizer worked to stop this attack, okay, let me stipulate that Pfizer stopped the Brooklyn Bridge attack. If it worked then why do we need to increase the powers the government has?
What we need to do is we need to listen to people that are nonpartisan professionals, like Michael Hayden, Robert Mueller, the FBI. These guys don't care about Republican, Democrat bullcrap. They care about keeping our country safe. They're well-respected mm-hmm. on both sides of the aisle. They know stuff that we don't know.
I understand.
Speak,
now, Mike.
Whenever they speak, those are the people we need to listen to. Forget about Bush, Obama, Clinton, whatever. That's mm-hmm. all bullcrap. We need to listen to those guys.
I see.
And I hope that I'm wrong. I think there will be another attack on our soil. And
Wait, let's get to the point of what you're saying here, though, Mike. Mike, listen. I mean, listen to yourself.
Go ahead.
Listen to yourself. Okay. You're telling me on one hand that the FISA law has been working, because that it's been working. But now you're telling me that we need to give them even more power based on what Mike Hayden says. Okay, who is a tool of this administration? He's a political appointee. Now I can tell you this.
I can tell you what
Russ Feingold. Hold on, Mike. Hold on, Mike. I don't care what Obama said about it.
Okay.
I believe that Obama voting for this was probably one of the worst things he's done as a senator. The bottom line is, Mike, is that Russ Feingold, one of the few senators who sits on both the Judiciary Committee and the Intelligence Committee, has actually seen what the government has been up to, and 70 senators have not looked into this at all. There hasn't been a single investigation as to what's been going on. So why are you so willing to let Mike Hayden tell you that what they're doing is not illegal?
Here's the thing. It's just not Mike Hayden. Look at the Senate Intelligence Committees that have our free.
I just told you exactly. What Russ Feingold said.
They voted 11 to 2. Voted 11 to 2 for it, and they're controlled by Democrats, and they voted for it. They know the that really matters.
Oop. You can't say that. So, I mean, there you have it, folks. Listen to Daddy. Listen to Daddy. Everything will be fine.
And you'll be in a world
if Mike Hayden says it's okay, hey, J. Edgar Hoover said it's okay, why wouldn't I listen to him? He's the head of the FBI. Nixon says he's not a crook.
In the world of
Daddy told me not to question him. Man, what has happened in this country? That's something so blatantly, you know, we don't need the Fourth Amendment. Daddy told me we didn't need it. Okay, we got to catch up here on that. Let's play a little bit of sound today from a John McCain. John McCain campaigning the Straight Talk Express, folks, rolling down to the Steel Towns, Pennsylvania. I'm going to go to Pittsburgh. I'm going to sit around Three Mile Island. I'm going to talk about the Steelers. I don't like to talk about my war record. I don't need to flaunt it. I don't need to raise the fact that I was tortured. I don't mention the fact that I actually broke under torture and signed confessions and actually said that I was a war criminal and denounced my country. I don't talk about that part. But I don't talk about any of it because I'm too honorable of a man. And I'm a straight talker. So when someone asks me, what do you think about Pittsburgh? You ever think, what's the first thing that comes to your mind about Pittsburgh? Well, of course, I'm reminded about the fact that I was a prisoner of war. This is number 13.
In our area yesterday, Senator John McCain said he loves the Steelers and that the team was on his mind during the 6 years he was held prisoner in North Vietnam.
When I was first interrogated.
Now, hold on. Stop this. Stop this for 1 second.
Really?
Stop this for 1 second, Ian. Understand that this was not a conversation about him being a prisoner of war. The question was, When you think of Pittsburgh, what comes to your mind? Okay, so play the tape now.
To give some information because of the pressures, that the physical pressures that were on me, I named the starting lineup, the defensive line of the Pittsburgh Steelers, as my squadron mates.
Turns out there's a small problem with that statement. In the Senator's autobiography, written back in 1999, he said he gave the names of the Green Bay Packers' offensive line.
Ooh. Now that seems to be a fair... Now here's the question for you folks. We got to take a break. We'll take your calls when we come back. 800-989-1480. Here's the question I pose to you. Is John McCain just forget? I mean, this is obviously something he's lived with for a long time. Did he simply forget which team it was? Or is he planning to talk about this no matter which state he's in? Is he going to, when he heads to Green Bay, or when he heads to Wisconsin, is it going to go back to the Packers? Maybe when he's in New York. I read off the starting lineup of the Giants. The Jets and the Giants. I did both. I did the offensive line of the Giants and the defensive line of the Jets. Yes, the Boston Patriots. I think they were the Boston Patriots. It was AFC teams. I did the Pro Bowl. The Pro Bowl, that's what it was. I named everybody who started in the Pro Bowl. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. Be right back. We're back. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to talk to the filmmaker, Garbage Warrior. We'll be talking to Josh Orton, blogger at MyDD. Outreach for Netroots Nation, formerly Yearly Co's, happening next week. I'll be doing some type of video cast from there, I think, so check out samcedarshow.com. Let's go to Philip, Sirius Satellite Radio, St. Louis, Missouri. Welcome to the program, Philip.
Hey, Sam. The proponents of these FISA, FISA legislation, they have yet to prove conclusively that they cannot prevent the terrorist attacks with the former legislation. You can catch 1,000 terrorists with this legislation. You have to prove to me that you can't do it while protecting my civil rights, and that's really all I've got to say. Thanks.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. And it goes beyond that. I mean, look, if the law was broken, the law was broken. How much are you willing to sacrifice for supposedly some notion of safety? I mean, we are supposedly, right, we're fighting the terrorists because they hate us for our freedom. They hate us for things like the Constitution and the First Amendment and the Fourth Amendment. So we're going to show them. We're going to get rid of the First Amendment and the Fourth Amendment, and then let's see who's crazy now. I mean, that's the argument, right, folks? I mean, that's what we're talking about here. They hate us for our freedoms, and to get them, we're going to get rid of our freedoms. Yes. Only a genius could think of such a plan. In fact, they hate us for our way of life. And so what are we going to do? We're going to bankrupt the country.
We'd like to thank you, Harvard.
You whiners!
For really showing us the way.
Don't you see? Don't you see if we have a mortgage meltdown, a credit crunch, the terrorists lose?
Prosperity was round the corner.
John McCain, the list just goes on and on this week of all his... I don't know if they're gaffes. I mean, when you say that Social Security is... What did he say? It's a disgrace? Got a email from listener Leah, who writes, to those callers complaining about Social Security, it may be helpful to note that if Social Security were not there for our parents and grandparents, we, the children, would be taking care of them. What are the caller's parents living on? And she's absolutely, I am so grateful my parents in their later 80s are able to care for themselves in their own home thanks to Social Security and their own financial investments. You do have a choice, folks. You can start up your own 401k. But if that craps the bed, as it were, you will always be assured that you do not wallow in poverty because of the existence of the Social Security Retirement Insurance Program. Mark, in San Francisco, California, welcome to the program. Just got a minute.
Hello, Sam.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, yeah, I wanted to talk about the Supreme Court again. I was kind of cut short last night, but to me, that's the biggest issue we have here is because the Supreme Court took our right to vote away, and we lost our democracy at that point, and that led in this criminal administration, which has just basically given Al-Qaeda everything it's wanted. Yeah. And to me, the Supreme Court has to be held accountable. I don't know if we can impeach them, but we can demand them to resign and tell them they're the reason why we're in the mess we're in because they took our democracy away.
Mark, I'll tell you, I couldn't agree with you more. I am still convinced that historians will look back on that case and see it as the seminal event of this era. I really do believe that. And I believe we see things like FISA because of the shock and the trauma that reverberated throughout the legal institution, the institution of the law, and academics and constitutional law lawyers. I really do think that had a horrible, horrible impact. I think it made a lot of people realize that the Supreme Court is not above petty politics. We've got to take a break. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy for the final night of this glorious four-day stretch of filling in for Mike. Truth Seekers are great. Ian, Billy have been fantastic. Lauren, of course. Sammy Cam is in effect at samcedarshow.com. Weakest, horriblest for John McCain. Of course, you wouldn't know it. What's that music? Ian, what's that? Oh, I've never heard it go that far. Weakest, it's all right, buddy. It's Casual Friday. Casual Friday. We'll take your calls on just about anything, 800-989-1480. I know it's a very difficult time for conservatives. It's a very difficult time for Republicans. There's virtually nothing defensible about this administration. There's very few of you out there who still support George Bush. And for the life of me, I can't understand why anybody would be supporting John McCain. If there are any John McCain supporters out there, I actually think the polls are incorrect. First of all, it's very early. But, I mean, if John McCain has even like a day, pick one of the days of this week. Whether it's when he refused to answer the question about Viagra, whether it was when he lied or misforgot or got confused about his anecdote of telling a reporter that the one thing he remembers about Pittsburgh, the one thing that strikes in my mind about Pittsburgh, is when I was a prisoner of war, which I don't talk about, incidentally. I never talk about it. But you said Pittsburgh, and that makes me think prisoner of war. And I'll tell you why. Because when they physically manipulated me or tortured me, I never talk about the fact that I was tortured. And I certainly never talk about the fact that I actually cracked and denounced America. But when they did that to me, I read off a list of the great defensive line, the famous defensive line of the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, the one that actually didn't exist until a year or two after I was released. Now, of course, it turns out that the that in his autobiography, his memoir, I wonder if he wrote it. My guess, no. When you have an heiress as a wife who spent in 1 month like $750,000 on her credit card, $750,000, you whiners. Do you think that you just don't throw some cash to a ghostwriter? I mean, I don't think it's a big deal. I mean, most already do. I mean, most politicians have ghostwriters anyways. But maybe the ghostwriter got it wrong when the ghostwriter said it was the Green Bay Packers. Maybe the story's fake all along. I don't know. I mean, it's interesting that that was the one thing that stuck out about Pittsburgh. Maybe he thought the guy said Green Bay. What's the one thing? Green Bay doesn't sound the same to me. Meanwhile, we have the audio now from Foreclosure Phil, John McCain's top economic advisor, co-chair of his campaign, who is now not going to be a public face of the campaign, supposedly. Just going to be advising John McCain on the economy. And so you're John McCain, my friends. Phil Graham, my friends, my longest, dearest friends. One of my longest friends. What should I do about the economy? Is there a problem with the economy? Well, this is what Phil Graham would tell you. This is number five.
We're in the mental depression. This is a mental recession. We've never been more dominant. We've never had more natural advantages than we have today. We've sort of become a nation of whiners. You just hear this constant whining, complaining. About our loss of our competitiveness.
Whining and complaining. And we're a nation of whiners. I never whine. Look at my suit. It costs $2,000. We're a nation of whiners. And as John McCain's top economic advisor, I'm just going to tell him, this is what you got to do with the economy. Tell those stinky Americans to stop whining. Be a millionaire. You'll see that it cures whining. Let's go to Rich in Sirius Satellite Radio, Cincinnati, Ohio. Hello, Rich. Rich? Rich. Rich is left. They're whiners. Okay, so, John McCain... Well, let's hear what Obama had to say. This is number three. This is what he had to say on Thursday in response to John McCain's top economic advisor saying the problem with the economy is that Americans are too stupid to realize the economy's doing great.
Senator Graham then deemed the United States, and I quote, a nation of whiners. A nation of whiners. Now, this comes after Senator McCain recently admitted that his energy proposals, for the gas tax holiday and the drilling, will have mainly, quote, psychological benefits. I want all of you to know that America already has one Dr. Phil. We don't need another one. When it comes to the economy, this economic downturn is not in your head. When people are out there losing their homes and property values are declining, that's not a figment of your imagination. And it isn't whining to ask government to step in and give families some relief.
Now, speaking of whiners, here is what John McCain had to say in response to Phil Graham. This is number four.
Phil Graham does not speak for me. I speak for me. So, I strongly disagree.
At the very moment these words came out of John McCain's mouth, at the very moment he whistled these words to his friends, what was Phil Graham doing? Well, according to the Washington Post blog, the top advisor to Senator John McCain repeated his assertion that the economy is not in recession. He declined to retract the comments quoted in the Washington Times. I'm not going to retract any of it. Every word I said was true. And where was Phil Graham as John McCain was saying, Phil Graham does not speak for me. I speak for me. Phil Graham was speaking from New York, where he was meeting with the Wall Street Journal editorial board to represent John McCain's economic policies.
Woof, woof.
There you go, folks. In the very moment, the very second, I don't know if it was the very second, that John McCain was claiming that his top economic advisor does not speak for me. His top economic advisor was, in fact, speaking for him. That is what we call some straight talk. That's called straight talk. The Straight Talk Express is now departing. We got to take a break. 800-989-1480. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Josh Orton, blogger from MyDD. He's also from the Netroots Nation organization, putting on the Netroots Nation convention happening next week in Austin, Texas. I'll be there. Will you? You can tell me after the break. We'll take some calls, 800-989-1480. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy.
Had a little, I thought that I needed a lot. A little was overrated.
We are back. Was a little too complicated. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. It is Casual Friday, folks. Man, it's so casual tonight. It's almost Saturday. That's how casual it is tonight. On the phone, my old friend Josh Orton, now a high profile blogger at MyDD.com, one of the biggest blogs in the lefty blogosphere, and with the organization Netroots Nation. Apparently you got some type of Netroots Nation convention coming up. Is that right, Josh?
Yeah, we're going to Texas next week.
Going to Austin. Now, this is the former Yearly Co's. It is now sort of branched out in a way, right, Netroots Nation?
Yeah, I mean, we call it sort of a happy outgrowth of the first 2 years. You've been at both. First year was in Las Vegas in 06. Second year was in Chicago last year. They had all the presidential primary candidates except for Biden debate. And at the end of the last year, organizers decided to branch out and that it was sort of bigger than just the Daily Coast community and decided to rebrand it Netroots Nation. And this year we went to Texas, and the Texas Netroots community, or they call themselves the Tex Roots, are actually, it's a really vibrant community. They've, I guess it makes sense in a way that you know, places where they've gotten sort of a beating from Republicans through redistricting and Tom DeLay. And there's actually, they've banded together, and it's quite a vibrant community. And they found us, you know, as much as we found them. And so we're really excited about it.
And really, Netroots Nation is just a subset of the whiners in this entire country. I mean, we're really a nation of whiners. I'm not sure if you're aware of that.
Yeah, no, it's gonna be you know, 90% whiners, and you know, I would say 85% of the actual conference is psychological. You know,
yes.
It's not really even physical.
You don't even have to. You're just imagining you're having to pay those higher plane rights. You have to pay for checked luggage and stuff like that. That's all in your mind, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right.
So let's talk a little bit what's going to go on in Netroots Nation. One of the things that we, I don't know if we can announce this quite yet, but I will be doing a. You guys have landed what I think is one of the biggest high profile interviews. And we can't really go into it, why it's such a big deal, but I will be doing the interviewing duties. Is that right?
That's right. And it's not Obama. It's not, you know, President Bush. Or, you know, it's not the Dalai. You know, but it's you know, we're looking for, you know, there's a lot of conversations that happen in the blogosphere throughout the year, and one of the qualities of the blogosphere is sort of sniffing out big stories that maybe the traditional media misses. And, you know, this interview is going to be, you know, we can't quite announce it yet, but this is one of those interviews, this is one of those stories where, you know, the blogosphere was way ahead of the traditional media in sniffing out one of these sort of big, you know, sort of touchstone stories about that really sort of illuminates what happened with the Bush administration.
And in fact, I mean, this one story is a subset of a much larger story, and every end of this story was essentially broken via the blogosphere, via the blogs, and they've been the ones who have been following this, and there's getting to be a larger awareness of what's going on in the mainstream media a little bit, and certainly Congress has paid attention to this. But tell me about some of the other panels. I mean, you got some great panels. You got stuff on the media, stuff on
the greatest story, and Rick Perlstein is going to be doing a panel with Paul Krugman from the New York Times, and with Digby and Atrios on how the media learned to bend over backwards for the right. We've got great keynotes, you know, internet and intellectual property luminary Lawrence Lessig, and then also, you know, speaking of things that the blogosphere was sort of a leader on. Our Saturday night keynote is going to be new Congressman Donna Edwards, who of course, you know, unseated Al Wynn in the Democratic primary in Maryland.
I mean, this is one of the things that I've really noticed is starting to happen online, and people have anticipated it, at least, you know, in the left blogosphere, is that you're seeing more and more blogs sort of picking up the banner of better Democrats. We've heard for a long time more and better Democrats, and you're starting to see the shift from more Democrats in anticipation of the Democrats gaining on their majorities in both houses and perhaps the White House, and you're starting to see them focus a little bit more, maybe gearing up towards 2010, on just getting better Democrats.
Yeah, that's right, and I think that it's a sign of maturity for the movement that, you know, a couple years ago when we first started looking at, you know, when you know, maybe 04, 05, you know, we just wanted Democrats in the Congress. We just, you know, we were in the minority in both houses in Congress. We just wanted volume. And I think it's a sign of maturity for the movement now that we have majorities in both houses of Congress, and we have, you know, a good outlook for this year's election cycle. You know, we can really start looking at getting Democrats who are supportive of our progressive values, who look at things like, you know, ending the war in Iraq and universal health care and things like net neutrality and respecting the Constitution. You know, we can really sort of turn to a more specific focus on Democrats who really uphold the values of the progressive movement.
And also, if you head down to Netroots Nation, you can check out A Bad Situation. This is a film I made. Mark Maron's in it. Janine Garofalo's in it. David Cross. A whole bunch of people never got released. And it's going to screen for the first time at Netroots Nation.
What time is it screening? Do you know?
No. Thursday night?
Like 2 in the morning?
Thursday night, I think about 2 in the morning. Mostly it's going to be in my hotel room.
Right, and I guess I would be remiss if I didn't tell people that if they, you know, the conference is next Thursday through Sunday. If they want to register, it's netrootsnation.org.
Josh, It was great to talk to you. You know, Janine's going to be on later. Josh was the executive producer of the Majority Report. It's like old. It's like reunion night here.
It's really psychologically confusing. I don't even think it exists.
Yes, it's all in your mind. You're a huge whiner, Josh, and I appreciate your whining with us. When we come back, we'll be talking about the movie Garbage Warriors, Cedar and from Malloy. Maybe it's a homeless, aliens, immigrants, maybe it's life. Don't tell me that it's imminent. Come on, people now. It's my only brother. Everybody get together. Try to love one another right now. Come on, people now. It's my only brother. Everybody get together. Try to love one another right now. We are back. It is the Mike Malloy Show. Sam Cedar sitting in for Mike Malloy. On the phone, Oliver Hodge. He's the executive producer and director of the new film, The Garbage Warrior, which documents the architecture of Michael Reynolds, who builds self-sufficient, off-the-grid communities from recycled materials and more. You can get more information at garbagewarrior.com. Welcome to the program, Oliver.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
So your film tells the story of this guy, Mike Reynolds, who is from New Mexico. You describe him as, I guess, a renegade architect. Give us a little background into what he's doing and why it's different from traditional architecture, why it's different from even traditional green architecture, and why you wanted to follow this guy.
Well, what he's doing that's different than normal architecture, I suppose, is trying to use the natural phenomenon like gravity and radiation and convection that's given by the planet to us on a daily basis to run the utility systems, the energy required, and the usage for utility systems within a house. So basically, the houses are completely off-grid. The orientation of the houses is towards the south, so you're getting maximum solar gain. So really the concept is to be completely off the grid and look after the people inside the houses before the actual design of the house, if you like. So it's more like form follows function rather than the function being pushed into a really wacky shape, you know, which is what a lot of architecture is about. So,
and to a certain extent, I mean, while that's, you know, that concept, at least in terms of, passive solar and those type of issues and being off the grid is, I don't know that it's conventional, but it's traditional on some level. But he's also, the materials he's using are very different than you see being used in building.
I mean, there's a lot of other, green architects out there. But the thing that's, separates Mike from the rest of them is the fact that he builds his houses out of trash or garbage, used car tires, beer bottles, beer cans, anything they can recycle. They're even cutting the sides out of old washing machines with nibblers and making them into roof tiles and car doors and all sorts. So, they're going down the dump and getting anything they can because they think it's a local material and it's free. So you can build cheap houses.
So, I mean, why don't you tell me about how you met Mike Reynolds and why it is that you decided, like, you've got to follow this guy. I mean, this is over the course.
I met Mike in England in 2003 when he came over to build. He came over to help a group of British builders build a sustainable home on the South Downs near Brighton, where I live. And they were wanting to use this building as a demonstration project to prove his concepts could work in England. And I met him, and he was only there for 2.5 weeks, but I was inspired to follow his story, really. So I took a crew back to New Mexico after he left and caught up with his story there. And I was really inspired by Mike because when I first met him, he was in the trenches with the crew with a sledgehammer working side by side. He wasn't, in an office with a clean iron shirt on. He was out there covered in mud, fighting in the front line. He's also quite a political activist, which shows very much in the film, because the film's very much about his political struggle to try and evolve his community and architecture and our way of thinking, for that matter. So I was inspired by his will to fight and get in there and, you know, try and change policy. And that's really what the film is about. It's about the speed of change that's needed. And him and his crew, they're frontline activists as well as builders. And for a filmmaker, that's pretty inspiring. So I couldn't let go once I got in. So that was it.
We're talking to Oliver Hodge. He is the executive producer, director of the film Garbage Warrior. You can get more information at garbagewarrior.com. And he's got this organization, Earthship Biotexture, which, tell us what that means. I mean, what does Earthship Biotexture mean?
Well, Earthship is the building that he's doing, which is, the off-grid. It's a building that will sail on the seas of tomorrow, hence it's called an Earthship. Biotexture is a combination of biology and architecture. Really, the buildings have plants that recycle the waste. They clean up all the waste water twice. They clean up the sewage water, and they grow you food. And the water systems all run by gravity and solar power, and the heating system is run by passive solar and convection. And the water is used four times in the building, so you never let a single drop of water leave the building, the modern buildings. And there's an anaerobic breakdown of bacteria in the planter cells that cause all sorts of basic, it's real basic biology and physics, really. So biotexture is a kind of evolution of architecture.
So tell us a little bit more about this. We see him building, obviously, this house, but the real conflict comes from him attempting to get changes in legislation that's going to make his project more viable.
Yeah, I mean, he needed the change in legislation, because in the early days, he's been doing this for 30 years. He built his first beer can house in the early 70s, 1971 or 2. And then since then, he's evolved. And his concepts have got more and more popular, and massive communities sprung up in the desert of people following his ideas. And Mike bought land, and he shared land with people that wanted to come in and build. And that got him into a lot of trouble, because he tried to redefine the law. Originally, the local commissioners and state officials let him do it as a kind of experimentation area. But once he got to a certain size, and obviously trial and error learning, when you're trying to evolve, you're going to upset some people along the way. And sure enough, Mike upset some people. A few people complained, and then the Board of Architects and the planning regulations threw the book at him, and there was a series of court cases, and the communities got shut down. That's why they needed to change the law, and that's why he rewrote the law 10 years later and went back to the legislator 3 years ago to fight for a change in legislation. And the idea of the legislation is to give people a space to evolve without the encumbrances of laws that are really there, because we live in a luxury society, and we've got very, very petty rules that really come about through living in wrapped up in cotton wool in modern industrial world. And the reason why we're wrapped in cotton wool is because we're extremely wealthy from an excessive amount of oil. Well, that oil's now running out, and the cotton wool is fading away a little, and things are going to get a little sharp and uncomfortable. And the sooner we start trying to evolve and letting people evolve, not just corporate companies and governments trying to evolve for us, but actually give us, the people, a little space, without the encumbrances of these rules, so we can evolve quickly at the speed that is necessary in order to survive what's coming to us. So that was the idea of Mike's law. He succeeded in the end after a long time of trying.
Now, how did Reynolds get involved? And, like I said earlier, you shot this over 3 years. You followed him in four different countries. How did he get involved in the recovery and rebuilding after the tsunami that hit, all through Southeast Asia?
Yeah.
everything he wanted to do was far more welcome there. I mean, maybe for obvious reasons, maybe for some that are not so obvious.
Yeah, I mean, he did. He went out there after the tsunami struck Asia. He had various invitations, and the one that he went for was from the Andaman Islands, a group of islands in the middle of the Andaman Sea, Bay of Bengal, and they got hit pretty bad. It was a real mess when we got there. Sometimes when there's a disaster, people are much more open to new ideas, especially when their infrastructure's gone, and meaning their utilities. The generator was flooded with seawater. Their wells for fresh water were polluted for 7 years with salt water. They get salinated for 7 years. So suddenly catching rainwater and passively heating your house and cooling your house isn't such a bad idea, because if a tsunami comes again, at least you can just go in and clean out your water tank, and as soon as it rains, you've got fresh water again, whereas if you're relying on a well, you're going to have to wait for 7 years. So there are advantages. The other timely idea that it was good was the fact that the government and the NGOs were whacking up these tin houses made out of corrugated iron, which were literally ovens. I mean, the people were, there was 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 of them in a house, and they were 8-foot square ovens that were cooking people. I mean, you know, it was very, very uncomfortable for these people to live. The infrastructure around them was terrible. When the monsoon came, it turned into a mud bath. And so comparably, when you're building in a disaster zone, people don't have the luxury of an oil-based society where they're wrapped in coal. Well, sometimes any idea is welcome, and you can evolve quicker, and sometimes you've got more chance in situations like that anyway. So, you know, out of a disaster can come something good.
It's almost the flip of the shock doctrine that Naomi Klein writes about, or maybe not so much even a flip. It's these type of moments offer new opportunities, and hopefully there are positive ones. So tell us, we just got a minute here, what is Mike Reynolds up to now? How can people find out more about his projects and how they can begin to at least contemplate this type of evolution?
Well, Mike is now out in Bonaire, I think, in the Caribbean, doing a little village out there for someone that is trying to get some buildings underway. He's also got a project in Norway, retrofitting a 7-story concrete building in Bergen, which is part of the architecture school there. And they met him when we screened the film Garbage Warrior in Bergen in Norway.
Oh, wow.
And he's got several projects in Africa as well, some of which have been spurred on by Garbage Warrior, people said. The film is actually causing more things to happen, more projects around the world. So documentaries can change the world. You can get in touch with Mike at earthship.net or earthship.org to, you know, if you're interested in Earthships, there's a whole lot of stuff they can send you, books and whatever. If you want to buy the DVD and all the extras, you can get that online, $24.98 online at garbagewarrior.com. That's a good introduction to Earthships and the crew and what they're all about, the spirit of the adventure the last 30 years. And then, you know, really, a lot of people are kind of buying the movie and also buying some of the little early instruction DVDs from earthship.net, and either building their own house, or you can buy plans off Mike. You know, they're just package house plans, a very basic build-yourself-an-earthship plans as well. So there's a lot you can do yourself, but you can also employ the crew, and they'll come and do it for you.
Oh, great. Oliver Hodge, executive producer, director of the film The Garbage Warrior. You can get more information at garbagewarrior.com. Thank you so much for joining us, Oliver.
Great. Thank you for having me.
We got to take a break. It's Sam Cedar in from Mike Malloy, number 800-989-1480. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, my friend. to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed.
We're back. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy. Numbers 800-989-1480. Nova M Radio Network. Sammy Cam is in effect, ladies and gentlemen. Coming up in the next hour, Jane Ann Garofalo, I guess, will be joining us. Let's go to our phones. Kevin in XM, Bel Air, Florida. Welcome to the program, Kevin.
Sam, how are you?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
Fine. Being a huge Steeler fan and went to their last Super Bowl as well as many other games every year, and I'll be at the Browns opener in Cleveland with our usual seats right over the Steeler tunnel. What year was John McCain shot down?
He was out by 1970, so I think it was like around, or 71, so I think it was around 60.
I think he got out in 71, I think he was shot down 65, something
right.
Like that. It came out to almost 5.5 years.
Right.
So was he getting news reports of the Pittsburgh Steelers then? When did the Pittsburgh Steelers win their first Super Bowl?
I believe that was in 72, is that right?
73, 74, 76, or 77, 78.
Yeah, it's like it's Mean Joe Green, right? It's the Coca-Cola ad, right? I mean, they weren't
when he was taken prisoner. Those people were still, if they were even in college yet,
right?
They were not. They were in college. They were not Pittsburgh Steelers. He's talking about their defensive line. He's referring to the Steel Curtain,
right?
Mean Joe Green, AC Greenwood, Crazy Dwight White, who just unfortunately, God rest his soul, just passed away. He is talking about the Steel Curtain, which was all drafted in the 70s and didn't win a Super Bowl until after the 73 season, I believe it is, 74, and then after the 74 season and 75 for the first two. They were really just lovable losers up to that point, though. They were starting to show promise maybe in 72, 73. As Bradshaw matured, he was terrible when he started. And you think Tampa Bay goes through problems. So what was McCain talking about? What defensive front? I'd like to hear him name the defensive front.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, Kevin, they asked him. They asked him, can you name any? He goes, no, I can't remember. Which, you know, at first it made sense. But first of all, we know from his own memoir that he claims that he did the same thing with the Green Bay Packers. And obviously he didn't, you know, I did not follow the Steelers back in 72. I was 6 years old. And I didn't even start paying attention to football until probably 75 with Russ Francis and Sam Bam Cunningham on the Patriots.
Well, I was in high school in Oil City, Pennsylvania when they won their first couple, and in college.
Well, look, even I know Mean Joe Green. I mean, you know, I mean,
I have a signed hat by Mean Joe Green and Franco Harris.
So he was just basically BSing. I mean, he was just full on BSing. I mean, I don't even think this can be attributed to, another one of his famous so-called senior moments. I think he was just BSing and didn't think, maybe he forgot that he wrote about it.
It's Hillary and Kosovo all over again.
Absolutely. It really is. And what's also sort of, it's all part of his strategy to just like, I'm not going to talk about it, but if you give me any opening and I can make a story up that would in some way lead me to talk about the fact that I was a prisoner of war, because that's what he's running on.
Well,
I
appreciate that you're one of the few people afraid not to say that he does not talk about the fact that he was broken.
Yeah, oh no, he doesn't. And I've seen the video, and in the coming weeks, I will be putting out a video compilation of him admitting it on national television.
I'd love to know. Post it on your website. I'd love to know.
I will. Sign up for an email on my website, and when I get around to setting up an email service, I will let you know. I appreciate the call, Kevin. You will see more about that video. I promise you, folks. I will show that video. And out. I would also break under torture. But I'll tell you what, once I knew that torture was just a fake to force false confessions, I wouldn't turn around and vote to allow this country to torture. like John McCain did. So I don't know if this guy just thought he could get away with telling this lie, or he's just so desperate to run on this that he's willing to do anything to say it. Because, of course, we all know that if you've been in a box for 5 years, maybe we should take Zebediah. These guys that the Red Cross says that we tortured, maybe now they're qualified to be president. We got to take a break. Sam Cedar from Mike Malloy will be back. Janine Garofalo will be joining us. We are back. Sam Cedar in for Mike Malloy for one more hour. Finishing out the week. Numbers 800-989-1480. We'll get to your calls later in the hour. Sammy Cam is in full effect at samcedarshow.com. Of course, we are broadcasting on the Nova M Radio Network. It is my pleasure to welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen, by the telephone instrument, Miss Janine Garofalo, my old dear friend. Janine,
Sammy,
how are you?
Sammy, so excited. Getting ready to see Mamma Mia.
Oh, you're
in the movie theater. Can't wait.
Wait a second. Is Mamma Mia out now in the movie
theater? It is for me. I'm just preparing and trying to get the word out, because I don't think there's enough advertisements about Mamma Mia. I am just so goddamn, gosh darn excited. Gosh darn excited.
You cannot contain your enthusiasm.
I cannot contain myself, and hopefully the FCC can understand my excitement. Mamma Mia.
What is Mamma Mia about? To be honest with you, I haven't seen any advertisements.
It is a movie based upon a musical, based upon the lyrics of pop sensation, 70s sensation, ABBA.
Wow.
Band ABBA. Mamma Mia. I can't wait, Sam. I'm dressed up as one of the characters right now.
From ABBA?
No. From the story.
Now, wasn't this thing, I remember seeing the ads for it in the New York papers when it was a stage show, and
mm-hmm.
I thought it was like one of those murder mysteries or something like that. Maybe it was like a
dinner theater murder mystery, like
Mike
and
Tina's wedding
saw.
Or something like that, or
sure.
I don't know what it was, or so I stand corrected. I can't wait for that to come out too. There's
nothing. Well, I'll tell you, Sam, my parents and their friends from Houston, their fellow neighbors in the Exxon family, because my
mm-hmm.
father's a retired Exxon employee, and like a lot of northern families in the early 70s, after Saddam nationalized, we were transferred to Texas to really bulk up the Exxon oil movement, pushing into the Middle East with the help of the Carter Doctrine. I don't have time. I'm so excited about Mamma Mia. Good news is that all the oil contracts are back where they were pre-1973. But my point is this, Sam.
Thank gosh.
The Rileys and the Garofalos and the Kirkmans and all the other fun families in our neighborhood, who my parents are still friends with today, came to New York a few years back to see what? Ground Zero and Mamma Mia, the stage show.
Oh, no.
So I'm telling you, I am so excited to see Mamma Mia the movie, because I didn't get to see the stage show.
You know, I'm shocked. I'm shocked that you were not invited to the premiere.
I am. I'm actually shocked, too. But you know what? I don't care. I'm going to come hell or high water. I'm there.
Now, wait a second, Janine. I want to talk to you about this, because when we were doing the Majority Report,
yes,
for the first, I don't know, 6 to 8 months, leading up to the election, we would have your father, Carmine, on.
Carmine the conservative. Sure, the same guy I'm talking about who transferred the head of the family in 1973 to Houston, Texas.
Now, it was always a roller coaster. I mean, we would sometimes bring on, you know, U.S. Former retired generals to try and talk them down.
Yeah.
I mean, and it would inevitably, almost always, end up with either you in tears or me screaming at your dad.
Or you in your tears.
Right. Or me, yes. I mean, it was.
And my father breaking out another martini.
It was always an interesting conversation. Mm-hmm. So people always ask me, what's up with Carmine? Is he going to vote for McCain? Is he going to vote for Obama? I mean, you know, this was back in 2004 when people still thought Iraq was a good idea, that George Bush was a man of principle, and he would never lie to the country. And and we were talking to your dad, and he just wouldn't listen to any of it. Has his outlook changed at all?
He has only softened somewhat when talking to our friend Limor Savon. You remember Limor Savon, who was the first embedded female journalist in the Second Intifada in Israel. And she would sit in on Friday nights sometimes. And she talked to Carmine, the conservative. And I don't know whether he was five martinis in or she was just so persuasive, but he said, I might consider voting for a Democrat in the next election. Now, he has backed off that a little bit during the daylight hours when I speak to him. I don't think he would. If anything, I think he might abstain voting at all. But probably if push came to shove, he would still vote McCain. You know, my dad's been a conservative since he was a campus conservative in 1958 at college.
Right.
So this goes very deep with him, and it's a point of pride like it is for a lot of conservatives. They will never give up the ghost because I think, pride goeth before the fall, or whatever that phrase is. There's a lot of ego involved, and it's human nature. You know
right.
what I mean?
I mean, so much of his identity is wrapped up in that.
Yes.
And for him to sort of deny that means that he would have to reevaluate
everything.
Yes.
Every decision, every belief, everything he, you know, as I say, he worked for Exxon. And, you know, his whole life since graduating college basically has been tied up in oil in a way. And in the corporation, and you know, moving his family, you know, back and forth every 3 years between Houston and New Jersey, because that's where the headquarters for Exxon were, both in Elizabeth, New Jersey, and Houston, Texas. That's everything,
right?
You know, and also it's cultural for him too. Part of it, all of his peers, except there's one guy named Irv, who did come to see Mamma Mia in Ground Zero. Who is Irv the liberal, because at one time he supported Jesse Jackson, and his wife, every time that was brought up, would go, ew!
So,
that's a true story.
So what are you now? So what are you doing now? Are you you're shooting?
Get ready to see Mamma Mia.
Well, I know.
Get potatoes out of your ears. What am I doing?
No, but you. I mean, you're out in L.A. right now. Is that right?
Yes, I am. I'm in Los Angeles. I'm on a program called 24, as you know. Real instrumental in helping our institutionalized torture program.
Yeah, actually, I spoke to Philippe Sands, the author of Torture Team, and I think it was he that came out with this story in when the orders came down to basically unshackle the interrogators, basically gave them the almost the explicit go-ahead torture. They didn't know exactly what to do, so they were actually getting ideas from the program
from
24.
That's right. They would watch, not only is Fox News and Fox in general and right-wing regressive radio piped into the troops and the powers that be. You know, they basically all the time are inundated by Fox and Fox News and right-wing talk. But a lot of these people, when they were kind of brainstorming about what type of techniques to introduce into their new policies, there was a couple of people in those meetings who were big fans of the show 24. And they had, you know, remembered what they saw. So they were in contact with somebody. My feeling is possibly Joel Surnow, who is one of the erstwhile creators, producers of the show, who is gone now,
right,
who is a big right-winger and will proudly state that he is best friends with Rush Limbaugh, as if that's something to be proud of.
Was he on that run down to the Dominican where Rush got caught with all those Viagra pills?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. If he was, he didn't mention it to me.
Yeah, it's probably not something you would mention to your female acquaintances.
You never know, though. But, you know, he will. Joel Surnow, who's friends with Rush and who also has had Lynn Cheney to visit the set.
Oh, that must have been wonderful.
Oh, yeah. I enjoy having war criminals visit the set. I think it's a lot of fun, and it's a good morale booster. But they, as I stated, you know, in all seriousness, there was a number of people on the team to come up with new torture policies who were huge fans of the show 24. And I'm assuming that Joel Cerna was one of the liaisons for this. I may be totally off base in saying that, but I do know that Joel is a really involved in the White House and really friendly with a lot of the movers and shakers in Bush-Cheney world.
Didn't he also do that failed, like, half-hour?
Yes, the Right-Wing Daily Show.
The Right-Wing Daily Show. Now, I watched that. That was actually, you know, some things are so bad, they're good. Mm-hmm. That was worse.
Well, you know what the strange thing about a guy like Cernow and other people that I've met like him, to meet them and talk to them, they're nice enough and they're funny.
Right.
They've got children, they've got lives, and you think to yourself, what is going on here? What is the component that makes it be, you know, you and I have discussed this ad nauseum, what makes it be a conservative? What is the one screw loose here for the guy or gal? And, you know, it's the same thing, you know, obviously you've been reading a lot about the hedge fund guys and the people that are shorting stocks, right?
Right.
The people that have been shorting Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Mm-hmm.
And I try and think about these people. What's going on with them?
You know, I had this conversation with one of the IMers last night on the Sammy Cam. You know, this notion of like, well, if peak oil is real, why don't they in these companies, why aren't they attempting to develop alternative energy? And I think the bottom line is like these individuals, because there is no they, it's just a series of individuals who are all just sort of feeling like, you know, if I can make as much money as I possibly can, I can in some way immunize myself. I can cocoon myself in this money. In some ways, they may be right. I mean,
I don't think so. I actually don't. I think when it comes to sustainable living or non-sustainable living, when it comes to energy and economics and the environment, you cannot cocoon yourself. Everything's interconnected. Where's he going to go? Off-world in a pod with his kids?
Well, you know, I'll tell you something. I talked to this guy who made a movie last night about peak oil, and I don't know if I'm just not knowledgeable enough about whether or not it exists. It seems that it's a very likely theory, but you know, he's suggesting that, you know, maybe in 10, 20 years, 30 years, your average person won't be able to afford to fly on an airplane. It'll be reserved only for the extremely wealthy. Your average person probably won't be able to afford to take long car drives because it'll be something that only the very wealthy can do. And we're already seeing some element of that. I mean, when you get a guy like Phil Graham, who is,
one of the main destroyers of our economy, he,
yep,
along with the Marquette decision, is instrumental in all of this, Phil Graham.
And here he
is. From Texas, of course.
And he's McCain's top economic advisor. And he comes out and he says that Americans are whiners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how can you have this perspective unless you are so cocooned in a world of money that you are just completely out of touch?
No, it's not cocooning and it's not out of touch. You don't care. There's no way you don't know about it. And also, that kind of talk goes over well with the type of people that vote right wing. They
really do love
to see the world divided up into haves and have-nots, and the have-nots are just whiners, right? That talk is, he's not stupid.
Well, you know, I'll tell you something. I have a different theory. We got to take a break, but I have a different theory. We can talk
Mama
more about
Mia!
This. Mamma mia! I just think that, look, if all your friends are really wealthy, if you hang around with heiresses and millionaires, and, you know, you're in your air-conditioned limo with the tinted glass, you're just not going to know. These are just peons who are just using your air. All right, we got to take a break. I'm talking to Janine Garofalo, Sam Cedar, and from Mike Malloy. Janine, hang on during the break. We'll talk on the Sammy Cam. We got to take a break, folks. We'll be right back. It's Novam Radio. We'll be right back.
of seriousness to receive the nomination of the party of Abraham Lincoln and Theodore Roosevelt and Ronald Reagan. It's a very humbling
experience. Guys aren't around anymore, right?
I'm an old man. I hate everything but Matlock. Who is that now?
That's John McCain. That's back when you liked John McCain, right, Janine? We're talking to Janine Garofalo, Sam Cedar, in for Mike Malloy. Numbers 800-989-1480. Take your calls in the next segment. At one point, you actually liked John McCain,
many,
didn't you?
Many years ago, when John McCain was first on the scene and he had first written that book, Not the Faith of Our Fathers, or maybe it was that book. And
yeah, that's the book
it.
That actually nailed him on this lie about the Pittsburgh Steelers. Did you hear about this?
No. Please tell me.
You know how he doesn't talk about being a prisoner of war?
Right, I know that.
Because he doesn't want to bring it up. So someone today in Pittsburgh said, the question was, when you think of Pittsburgh, what comes to your mind? He immediately said, when I was in prison, when I was being physically pressured, they wanted me to give the name of my my crew and my commanders, and I read off the great defensive line of the Pittsburgh Steelers. And that's what I told him. And now, unfortunately, in his book, he claims that he told them the offensive line of the Green Bay Packers. And it's weird because for football fans, the great defensive line of the Steelers didn't come into fruition until 2 years after he was released from prison.
Well, either way, Sam. Maybe he read some football people, maybe he didn't. All I know is he had a big crush on Amy Poehler when he hosted SNL, and that told me he was all right.
Yes, yes.
It made me think, hey, there's an interesting guy. He's in love with Amy Poehler.
Did you hear?
Even before she was Amy Poehler, Amy Poehler.
Did you hear his response to the whole Viagra question?
No.
Apparently, Carly Fiorina, one of his surrogates, is claiming that he supported including birth control in health insurance programs, because apparently most health insurance programs will pay for Viagra, but not birth control. And he was asked the question, and he refused to even respond to it. It was very awkward.
Maybe he couldn't hear.
I think it also has to do with that's how you maintain your relationship with an heiress.
Oh, I doubt it. You think she wants to maintain that? You're out of your mind. That is a thing of the past. Nobody's having sex with John McCain. And, of course, I always want to give props to Martin Short for that great joke he told about John McCain, which I think I've already shared with you, but I'll do it again. The only time John McCain doesn't need to pee is when he's peeing. That's how old he is. I should have prefaced it.
All right, Janine, we've run out of time.
Oh, no!
Will you hang with me during the break? We could talk on the Sam
yes.
McCam.
Yes.
All right, folks, I'll take your calls when we get back. 800-989-1480. Sam McCam is in effect at samcedarshow.com. If the blog is swamped, go to samcedarshow.blogspot.com. It's Sam Cedar and from Mike Malloy on the great Nova M Radio Network. We'll be right back. I'll take your calls. Malloy. Numbers 800-989-1480. Phones are all filled up, and we're going to take care of that right now, ladies and gentlemen. It is Casual Friday. We'll talk about anything. David on XM calling from Missoula, Montana. Thank you for holding so long, David. I appreciate it. Oh, hello, David.
Hello.
Thank you for holding on for so long, David.
How you doing, Sam?
I'm doing great.
I wonder if old John McCain was having a senior moment when he wrote that speech for Barack Hussein Obama when he claimed there was 58 states.
I'm not sure I follow you, but...
Well, Barack Hussein Obama, he said here a while back that he'd been in all but one of the states campaigning. He'd been in 57 of them, and there's one more to go. I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. I mean, it's not as funny as getting it wrong when you tell a story about your captivity, but well, whichever. Or it's not quite as funny as saying that Social Security is a disgrace.
That's true.
Let me ask you, David. David, how old are you?
David,
hold on for 1 second. I'm going to let you get your reason. You've been on the hold for a long, so I'm going to give you a little bit of time here. How old are you?
I'm 59.
You looking forward to that Social Security, or you don't need it?
Oh, no, I haven't got a dime to my name.
So
I'm an over-the-road truck driver, and I have no chance of retiring.
Yeah, and Social Security is going to be a help to you then.
Oh, no, it's not going to be there. I can't live on Social Security.
Well, you can't live totally on it, but, I mean, you're going to get money coming in, aren't you, David? I mean, you're going to get anywhere from $10,000 to $16,000 a year. That's going to help, right, David?
Yeah, if I get it, probably, yeah.
Well, you'll get it, buddy. If you've been paying into the system, you'll get it.
Yep.
It's not a disgrace. But go ahead. Go with your point.
Okay. I was the reason I did call, there was two things. I'm going to stick to one here, maybe.
Okay.
Chuckie Schumer... made a speech or had some comments, I don't know, a press conference or something. And I heard it a couple times today on the radio. And just now during your half-hour news break on your radio station there, they mentioned that him putting doubt in about this bank's, is it IndyMac? Is that the name of that bank?
Yeah, IndyMac Bancorp. It is closed down. It was. It's basically the biggest bank failure in something like what was it? I don't know, 20 years or something since.
Yeah, they said it was the second biggest one in the country's history. Bad deal.
And Chuck Schumer had written a letter
about this bank, and a bunch of people heard it and panicked, and $1.2 billion in 3 days left that bank. Why would a politician say something like that about a bank and cause something like that to happen?
Let me just correct a couple of things. Chuck Schumer wrote a letter to federal regulators saying that he questioned the capitalization and the loans of this bank. And over the course of, it was closer to really to 10 days, customers withdrew a total of $1.3 billion from the bank. So, of course, the regulators are trying to cover their asses and say that it's because of Chuck Schumer's letter and not the fact that this this bank, which was the star of, and you've heard about this huge meltdown, right, on these subprime mortgages.
When Congress passed the law and Clinton signed it, the mortgage bank regulation thing a while back.
Let me tell you what it was, Dave. It's a Glass-Steagall Act. Listen.
It forced these banks to give these more dangerous loans out to people who maybe couldn't pay them back.
Now, David, let me ask a question.
That's a bad deal.
Did it also force them to securitize these things and sell them at two or three times their value? Have you not read anything about how the regulation was stripped? And in fact, you know who actually wrote that bill? Was Phil Graham, John McCain's top economic advisor, who, you know what, David? You're a truck driver, aren't you?
Yes.
How are your gas prices?
I have no idea what the price of gas is. My truck doesn't burn gas.
It burns diesel?
Yeah.
How's those diesel prices?
They're anywhere between $4.75 and $5 a gallon.
Are they helping you out?
No.
You whiner, David.
I'm not whining. No.
You talk about how you got no money, how you can't live on Social Security. That's what Phil Graham says about you, David. That's what the top economic advisor of your candidate, John McCain, your next Treasury Secretary, if John McCain becomes president,
let us go after our own oil, drill for our own oil, and push for nuclear reactors to make our energy like France is smart enough to do. and build these windmills. I've hauled some of these windmill parts and these windmill ranch farms they have.
Well, then you must have supported the windfall profit tax that the Democrats pushed and George Bush vetoed and John McCain voted against.
No,
that would have supported those alternative resources.
If you tax something, you get less of it at a higher price. Carter. That was proved years ago in the 70s. Who had the windfall pot? Was it Nixon or Carter?
David.
Somebody else tried that once.
I appreciate the phone call, buddy.
Lowered your dreams. It lowered the supply of oil
David,
and raised the price of it.
Thank you, David, for the call. But you hold on to your dreams, buddy. You keep hoping. You keep praying. And know that the top economic advisor, the co-chair of your candidate, thinks you're a whiner, talking to me about how much money you don't have. What a whiner! What a baby! My advice to you, sir, would be to become a millionaire.
We'd like to thank you, Harvard Hooper.
Hey, let's listen to the boys on Fox talk about how McCain's giving straight talk when he says, you're all whiners. This is number six. Let's hear what the Republicans think about people like our last caller who still, with an iron grip, hang on to that premise that Barack Hussein Obama is evil because of his middle name. Well, while you bow down to people who think that you're just a schmuck.
This was impolitic, maybe, but was he wrong to say that?
No, he wasn't wrong to say it. You know what this was? This was straight talk that McCain always says he's giving, and this is exactly what Phil Graham did. He gave straight talk.
What
we haven't had
a
recession. You know, people think we're in a recession. They claim about how bad the economy is, and it's weak, no question about that, although I see now they have record sales at Costco and Walmart. People are out there right through this downturn spending like mad. And the other part was a mental, what was the other part besides a mental recession?
A nation of whiners.
Well, I think that, I rest my case on that. America has become a nation of whiners. He shouldn't have tried to correct it. You know, he should have been, he clearly meant the people and not just a few leaders. But, you know, that was straight talking to see McCain react the way he did. I thought that was unfriendly toward a guy who supported him greatly. Look, this is going to be a one-day wonder.
But you can't win an election when you're running out accusing the electorate of being a bunch of whiners.
It was very impolitic.
Turn off Fred Barnes. I don't give a crap about this moron. What must go through the mind? I want to ask Michael from KTL, calling from KTLK in Los Angeles. Michael, you still dialing? You're on the phone, buddy.
Oh, I'm here, man. That was an accident. Sorry, bud.
Michael.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. What goes through the mind of our last caller when they hear the top economic advisor, John McCain, the co-chair of his campaign, say that guys like him who are talking about how they don't have enough money to retire, they're whiners?
You know what? I'll tell you the original reason why I called here in a minute, but personally, I think it comes down to personal responsibility.
Uh-huh.
In the end of your life, it comes down to personal responsibility. And I'll tell you why. I'm a 31-year-old man, and I'm also a driver, but I am a full-time student, full-time dad.
Uh-huh.
And I spent the first part of my young adulthood feeling sorry for myself. And you know what? After some internal reflection, I realized that I got to take responsibility for my own life.
Right.
And I actually want to, I'm pre-med. I started ministry and going to Bible school or going to medical school. And I decided medical school. And I tell you what, I'm working harder and more efficiently. I've had plenty of sleepless nights trying to finish my schoolwork, making straight A's. But I've taken that upon myself to do that. And I'm not depending on any government to support me at the end of my life. That's my business. And I think that if you don't take responsibility for your life, you are going to be dependent on the government.
Now, you drive a truck, right?
I am a truck driver. I'm a commercial truck driver.
What's happening with those highways?
It's pretty rugged.
Well, you mean it's pretty rugged. Why don't you
gas prices, fuel prices, and all that good stuff.
Do you think you're a whiner for saying something like that?
No, I don't. Well,
I mean, you just said it was pretty rough. I mean,
yeah,
I don't.
It is rough, but I'm. You know what? I'll tell you something about my boss. Also, he's he's done some prison time. He was a bad boy, but he's turned his life around, and he's now a he now owns his own business.
Oh, that's
and,
good.
We're feeling this crunch, but you know what? We're fighting through with it. And
that's good.
You know,
well, Michael, let me ask you what I meant by the highways was like. I mean, are they drivable? I mean, can you drive on those things? I mean, what if there were no highways?
What if there were no highways?
Yeah.
Well,
would that cut into your business?
Yeah. Quite a bit.
Yeah. I mean, now, do you feel like you rely on the government too much for building those highways?
No, of course not. There's certain things that need to be done.
Right. So why don't you tell us what things the government should and should not do? I mean, Mike, you're a self-made man, you know.
Not yet.
And well, you're working on it, and it seems like you're working hard. You don't think people should rely on the government. Well, obviously not for anything, because you rely on the government for highways, which allows you to do your business, right?
Of course.
Right.
Of course.
So,
I mean,
so where do you draw the line, Michael?
When it comes to things like social assistance, I think should be very, very limited.
Like Social Security. You have a problem with Social Security?
Well, it's failing, man. Failing.
No, it's not failing, Michael. I mean, that is a lie.
Not immediately.
It will be completely, according to the Bush administration's numbers, it will be completely funded till 2042. After 2042, if we do nothing, if we do absolutely nothing, you will receive 80% of your benefits until your kids have kids and they have kids. So it's not going to fail, and it's very easy to fix to the extent that it's broken. But you know, Michael, that if you pass on, your kids will receive Social Security benefits. If you become disabled, you and your kids will receive Social Security benefits. So you don't need the government right now, Michael, and I'm glad you don't, except for, of course, to make sure that you're able to have commercial business with your truck. And maybe, I don't know what else, maybe you get loans, maybe you don't get loans from for medical school. But either way, I think, Michael, you know, it's very easy to say that everybody should be as self-sufficient as you are, or maybe you're not self-sufficient. But I think if you look at it much more closely, you'll find that you do benefit from what you would consider socialism. You benefit from society gaining together and making everybody's life that much more possible to be realized. We'll be right back. It's the last segment of Sam Cedar filled in for Mike Malloy.
Love you till the end of time.
As the show begins to wind down. Well, we still have time to talk about Phil Graham, who thinks that all America, nation of whiners. Mr. C, listening on the internet in Bradenton, Florida. Welcome to the program, Mr. C.
Thank you, sir. I'd like to just like make one quick comment before I go on. About Phil Graham. First, the Bushes. Why is it? Stop and look at history. Every time the Bushes are in, think about it. The banks fail, we go to war, and we deficit spend the country in the hole. Every time a Bush is in, those three things happen. The banks fail. Remember the savings and loan when the old man was in?
Yeah, and then Neil Bush was involved in that too, actually. He had one of those big savings and loans.
And the Bush family has transferred more money from the taxpayers of the United States, I believe, than any family in the history of this country.
That's,
I mean, they've used socialism for their political and economic gain. So, I mean, And Phil Graham, I heard Jim Hightower talking one time.
Yeah.
He said that Phil Graham, his dad was in the military. Phil Graham, if I'm correct, and I think I am, he got grants to go to college. So it was all government socialism that made his tenured career, so you couldn't fire him once he was a professor, when he was wrong and had his screwed up mindset that he usually has, that's biased towards his pocketbook and against others out of his circle. He couldn't be fired. He had tenure, government education, always worked for the government. Then he became in politics and worked for the taxpayer. What a joke. But received paychecks from the taxpayer, health care paid for by the taxpayer. He's getting a retirement now from the taxpayer. And then when he gets out, what's he do? He goes to the big money that he did the deals with and the votes for when he was in.
Yep.
And then wants to finish us off and then tell these morons out there that the government's not any good for you because they want it all for them.
Yeah,
you know
that. I couldn't say it any better. I appreciate the call, Mr. C. That's it, folks. I mean, Phil Graham has told you exactly what the Republican Party is. They can say we're against spending, even though that they spend, they increase the size of government 50% larger than under Clinton. They can raise the debt ceiling, this and that. No matter what the Republicans say, at the end of the day, the one thing they do believe is that this taxpayer money, it's for us. There is no point to have society help society. What it is, it's all a racket for us. Period. End of story. Anthony, listening on the internet in New Jersey, welcome to the program, Anthony.
Hey, Sammy. I just wanted to say what a great week it's been of listening to you again on the radio.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
And also, I just wanted to add another point. You say this dissociation between reality and what they believe, and it goes back to your previous caller and how in his mind there's just such a dissociation that he pulls himself up by his bootstraps, and yet in reality he's so dependent not only on what our government does for us as far as roads and education and medical equipment, and I mean every part of our lives is helped because our government creates the society by which we run our daily lives.
Yep.
And, you know, there's just a disconnect between...
You know, Anthony, I got to let you go because we're at the end of the show, but you're absolutely right. And this guy is, you know, for guys like this, pulling themselves up by their bootstraps always also means pushing down on somebody else. It can't be, I'm doing this. It's always got to be, I'm doing this. And that means everybody else is somehow some type of lazy bum. There's no such thing as bad luck for these people. Until, of course, it happens to them. Pat, I'm sorry I can't get to you. Lisa, sorry about that. Jason, thanks for holding. Folks, it's been a great week. Thank you so much. Billy, Ian, Lauren, everybody at Novam, had a blast. Thank you, Mike. Hope you're well.